Victor J. Stenger is a renowned experimental physicist and the author of the New York Times bestseller, God, the Failed Hypotheses.
So I've been retired from research since 2000, since I left the University of Hawaii and moved to Colorado. And so I've pretty much limited myself to my writing. I've written books and, of course, a few articles here and there that relate to the stuff in my books. But I am, you know, I still regard myself as one of the spokespeople out there for the New Atheism.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have several books, like the book called The New Atheism and like God, the Folly of Faith, that have very little science in them. They're written from a scientist's perspective, but anybody could read them. Where I'm more interested in developing the ideas of the New Atheists, which is basically that against the notion that we should be trying to that we atheists should be trying to accommodate religion and work with religion. There's quite a split in the atheist community over that issue, where especially amongst working scientists today, the ones that I deal with in cosmology, for example, they still pretty much want to stay out of it. A few of them, like Sean Carroll and Larry Krauss, get the gloves on, but most of them don't want to have anything to do with arguing over religion. And certainly all the physicists I know have that attitude, again except Steve Weinberg. I try to find a little niche for myself, which is to apply my perspective as an instrumental physicist, as an experimental physicist who looks is interested in what the data has to say rather than what theories have to say, what philosophical notions are involved. I try to limit myself to the observations and then and point out that they disagree with the whole notion of there being a god of any sort, certainly a god that plays any major role in human life, that the evidence is strong enough now to conclude that such a god doesn't exist beyond a reasonable doubt. And not to just allow the moderate religious community, for example, to claim they have science supporting them, because I claim they don't.
Yeah, I mean, that's it's a very wild claim that they've got any science supporting them. Even if they do, at the most, it's a God of the Gaps argument, which is, oh, there's something mysterious here, let's see if we can put a shoehorn God in here. There's obviously different aspects to it. The very famous, who's the guy at the head of the Genome Project, who's the famous theist? Francis Collins. Francis Collins is a famous theist, but even he doesn't really use his science to expound God. He just basically says, this is a faith issue for me, and I leave it at that, which is...
He claims he's talking about proving the existence of God, but he doesn't. He just basically says it's possible. God is consistent with my understanding of science, and there are a number of others out there who take a similar attitude. And this is why I think God, the Failed Hypothesis was a unique book. I mean, I claim it's a unique book because no one else has gone as far as I have in that book. And that includes Richard Dawkins and Sam Harris and Daniel Dennett and Christopher Hitchens. None of them have gone so far as I did in that book to claim that we can now say beyond a reasonable doubt that the God that most people worship, a God that plays an important role in their lives and in the creation of the universe and so on, does not exist beyond a reasonable doubt, because if he did exist, we would have evidence for it by now. Such a God who plays such an important role surely would have produced some kind of sign of that by now.
Yes, and I know, I mean, obviously the title of the book says it all as well. And you are very aggressive in, A, obviously how evidence should be employed, and what evidence in general can say about the likely non-existence of a god. So in that respect, it's a very interesting book. Just in general, with the new atheism, though, in America, I find it there that it's gotten such a wide appeal. I mean, it's big in aspects of Europe, but slightly different, because Europe's always had a slightly longer history with atheism. And in the States, it's become very much a political issue. Obviously, the Bush administration did a lot for this as well, but in Europe, it's not as contentious as it is in the States, and that's why a lot of the new atheism has become so popular there, but also very confrontational. I mean, if you just look at some of the stats from Congress, where hardly any senator believes or openly claims to be an atheist, which surely just statistically must be wrong. But that's an aspect very unique to America. So people like yourselves, that, and Sean Carroll as well, who's actually very aggressive as well with his atheism, come in the firing line to a certain extent. And then people like Richard Dawkins get mocked for just generally being quite unsophisticated philosophically, which to a certain extent someone like Dawkins is, but he doesn't really care either, because that's his whole scientific project thing, so to speak. But it makes it all very, very, very interesting, I must say. And I don't know what way there is to move forward. I don't think aspects of the world, unfortunately, are ready for complete atheism. And I believe it's generally quite a dangerous and problematic way to live, especially when you see what the problems of faith are. So obviously, if you're ill and dying, you want to go to a hospital. You don't want to get kneeled down on your knees and pray. But people still take that that view. So it's very interesting why people still believe this in terms of social political aspects. And really, people like yourself who are very aggressive with it, as long as you keep putting out your work there that combines with great aspects of physics and the practice of the scientific method, hopefully more and more will come to the fore. But you can only do what you can do, Victor.
Could I just comment on that?
By all means.
Of the US and Europe, there's an interesting situation where, and that is that while non-Muslim Europe has been falling away from religion very rapidly, the former Christians, you have a large Muslim population that's growing and growing. And I've been in Europe enough in recent years to be amazed by how you walk down the street and half of people that are walking by, whether it's in London or in Brussels or wherever, are Muslims in their outfits. I don't know what the numbers are, but in the U.S., the Muslim population is negligible. Now, I wrote a column for a blog for the Huffington Post just a couple of days ago that you might want to check out, because I showed how it's called the New Secular Strategy. And I showed how the demographics are changing in the U.S. I list a recent survey that lists the number of people who are non-affiliated with any religion. They're called nuns by age group. And while the earliest generation, the so-called greatest generation that was in World War II and so on, 5% of them are non-religious. You go up to the recent millennials, the most recent group, and they're about 34% non-religious. And you just see a tremendous trend there away from not necessarily belief in the supernatural and some higher powers, but belief in organized religion. So I think there's a real tendency. Overall, there are now 20% of Americans who don't belong to any church. 20%. There are only 22% Catholics. There's almost as many as there are Catholics. And only Protestants. There are 48% Protestants. So that's the only group that's larger. The number of Jews, the number of Muslims, the number of Buddhists and Hindus are negligible, including Jews. There aren't that many Jews. There are 2% Jews and 2% Mormons. And that's the biggest other group besides the Protestants, Catholics, and non-affiliated. So So there's a definite trend in the U.S. happening now that I think might be countered in Europe with your growing population of Muslims.
I think the demographics there from the States is obviously atheism is on the rise considerably, but it's still there's still pockets of the country.
Did you see those full page ad in that the Freedom From Religion Foundation put out on the 4th of July? It was in the New York Times and just about every newspaper in the country. I mean, the four newspapers that I get or that I'm aware of all had full page ads. The New York Times, the Denver Post, the Boulder Daily Camera, and a paper in Longmont called which is another city nearby, about 10 miles away, that their newspaper, they all had this ad put in by the Freedom From Religion Foundation, which must have cost them hundreds of thousands of dollars around the country to put in, which means that the money is coming into the movement. And it was all about our godless constitution. It had pictures of Thomas Paine and Benjamin Franklin, and then our first four presidents, and quotations from them that made it very clear that America was not founded on Christian principles. And of course, that's the big battle that's going on. So it's a battle for people's minds again. If you give them the facts, I think at least the younger people who are willing to change their minds are going to be starting to pay attention to this. And I think we're going to see the secularists, I like to call them, because they're not all, again, atheists, they're going to have a greater influence as time goes on.
Sure, no, that's very interesting. They also had one they had a Super Bowl advert from the Freedom From Religion advert at Super Bowl this year, which was a big advert, a TV campaign, which obviously cost a lot of money. So that was quite surprising at Super Bowl. Obviously, the adverts there are very pricey to get in. Also, yes, the constitutional issue, to a certain extent, Paine and Jefferson's writing has been manipulated by certain theists. But it's just in terms of your secularism, atheism, are you... I'm a full-on atheist, so as I've mentioned, I'm very happy for people to be an atheist. Now, that's my own view, but I also think it's a much healthier way to live your life, both psychologically and practically. Are you happy just to settle for secular values, so you don't mind that people can believe in a God as long as it's left out of politics and the Constitution?
No, I would still try to work on them, too. I don't condone any kind of belief. I mean, the book I wrote called The Folly of Faith was based on the argument that faith is unreasonable. It's unreasonable to have any kind of faith in anything because faith is not based on any facts and on any evidence, on any really good argument. It's just based on a belief. Mm. And that shouldn't be the way we run things. So I would still work against that. I'm just saying that there's a growing community of people that are, first of all, not members of any church, so I call them secularists. Some of them are, you know, there's this term you'll hear called non-religious but spiritual.
Yeah, oh God, yeah, that's my...
And spiritual is a very ill-defined term. You don't know what that means. They could be people like Deepak Chopra who believe that reality is all an illusion, or at least matter is an illusion and reality is whatever you want it to be. And then you have people who say that they're non-religious but spiritual, who are perfectly atheistic but still think of themselves as spiritual because they have a love for humanity, a love for environment, and so on. So that word spiritual is very ill-defined. And I think you'll find that a lot more people are atheistic than are willing to say they're atheistic because they still want to say that they're spiritual people.
Sure, that's a very problematic. Obviously, I can imagine what if I was an atheist and I say I'm a very spiritual person. Yes, I'm intact with other humans. I have appreciation for other humans and their rights, etc. The other kind of spirituality that grinds me a bit more is obviously this kind of the Deepak Chopra spiritualism or an afterlife spiritualism, God, karma. This kind of spiritualism is just like the postmodern reaction to failed organized religion throughout history, and people have seen that organized religions is particularly oppressive. They're erroneous about scientific facts and the evidence of the world, but they still don't want to let go of this notion of the afterlife, so they believe in different aspects of spirituality, which then becomes, for me, very, very annoying, and that's another aspect they can, they perhaps should work on. But as I said, at the same time, everyone's entitled to their beliefs, and we can all agree on that. In terms of not knowing you're an atheist, have you seen, I'm assuming you've seen Dan Dennett's How to Tell You're an Atheist talk?
No, I'm not sure that I know which particular...
I will send you a link for it. So
actually, I've heard him speak. In fact, he was at a conference I went to just a month or so ago in Kamloops in Canada, which is near Vancouver. We actually spent a lot of time together. We got a chance to talk to each other quite a bit. But I'm not particularly aware of that argument.
Okay, so essentially you've probably heard, or it must have, somewhere that he runs a project called the Clergy Project, which is...
He did talk about that.
It's very... So, obviously, parts of the Clergy Project are people that work in the clergy, but they've lost their faith a long time ago. And it's obviously, because it's a very sensitive issue, everything on their website where these clergymen interact is obviously all anonymous. And part of the questionnaire that they asked the clergymen about how they lost their faith basically got turned into... It's a serious issue, but also quite funny. It became a questionnaire of how to tell you're an atheist, and it's very funny. And he gave the talk, I believe it's last year, at the Global Atheist Alliance in Australia, but it's like questions that you should ask people to check if they may be atheist but not aware of it. It's very funny. So if you've got time, I would recommend...
I did, actually. I think this probably is a talk that I did here, because he did talk about the Clergy Project, and I remember looking it up on the web. So I knew what he was talking about. Incidentally, that reminds me, just yesterday I got a long letter from somebody in Australia that shows you that, I mean, people are saying you're only talking to the converted. People are always saying that to me. Oh, you're just talking to the converted. You're not changing anybody's mind. Well, that's just not true. I get letters all the time from people saying that, not that they change their mind just by reading my books, but when they read my books, they say, well, you know, that's exactly, I've been thinking that way all along, and you helped me clarify my thoughts. And that's a good, it's a contribution. And this fellow had been raised as a Catholic, had become a Catholic priest and everything. I mean, he was really in it. And he started studying and reading the history of philosophy and so on, of religion, of Christianity, and he just dropped out. He got married, had four kids, it was quite a nice story that he told me. He told me quite a bit about his life. So this happens. People are obviously changing. This clergy thing is interesting because these guys have jobs. It's the only thing they know how to do.
Yeah, sure, that's a big problem. Professionally, that's all they can do, yeah.
You know, a minister in a church, and they have to teach the stuff. It's tough for them. Well, you know, Dan Barker, the president of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, went through all of that. So his books, he has two books now that tell about his story, and it's really fascinating. These guys all reasoned themselves out of it. Nobody told them what to think. They figured it out for themselves.
There's also another guy very similar to Dan Barker called Seth Andrews. I don't know if you've heard of him, but he's got a big project called the Thinking Atheist Project, and he's got a book out that's called The Deconverted, and it's a very similar story to him. Both his parents are theologians. He's from a family of, I believe it's 4 or 5 kids, and he's the youngest, and he's the only atheist in his entire family, and he's now about 45, and he reasoned himself out of theism. He told me about all the different stages he went through. He went from being devout Christian to having doubts, to becoming agnostic, to just completely throwing it away, and now he runs the Thinking Atheist Project, which is very popular. And it's these practical consequences to it, because his parents, it's heartbreaking for them that he's not a theist, but he can't believe in something he doesn't believe in. So,
well, a lot of people have had trouble, have had family problems over conversion. And I was raised as a Catholic, but I never did. I never had that problem. My parents were Catholics, but they kind of were the kind of mind where you believe what you believe. You know, you love your son, and that's the most important thing. Sure. And I have met with my cousins and others back east, from the New York area, in recent years. I hadn't seen a lot of them for a long time, but then in recent years I went back to New York when there was a big book fair there at the time of my bestseller, God, the Fatal Hypothesis, and I met with my cousins. They were all religious, and everyone, not all of them, there were a couple weren't. They had no problem with what I was doing. I was writing books. I have a brother who doesn't speak to me anymore, who's a very, very right-wing Christian, hard-nosed Republican Tea Partier with a PhD in mathematics, incidentally, which drives me crazy to think that he would not be bright. He was the valedictorian of every school he ever went to, and a lot smarter than I was growing up. And that's what happened to him. So he doesn't talk to me anymore, but everybody else did.
I think I know exactly what kind of Catholic upbringing you had, because it's very similar to mine. I call it wishy-washy Catholicism, where people are like, oh yeah, just, you're a nice person, don't worry about all that Bible stuff, you're okay. But then it has limitations to it. There's also theists.
My father went to church on Christmas and Easter.
Same with my parents. That's all they ever did. For example, when I got confirmed at the age of 13, and even then, as an atheist, I knew that I just got confirmed so I could have a church in my wedding photos, because it would look better than a registration office. That's actually no joke, but there's a different elements to that. So there are, I know people for my family parish that are very open-minded Christians, and one of them, I'm friends with their son, who's an open atheist as well, and the father is specializes in canon law, which is Catholic law, and he's a very open Christian. It's actually quite funny to them. They're like, oh look, we've got an atheist here on a table, isn't that funny? It depends what kind of social attitude you have behind it. Then there's obviously right wingers that really do think that you're being sinful when you're going to go to hell. So it's
I think the Catholics in general are more accepting than the evangelical Protestants. I think that's the difference. They are so adamant about it, whereas it kind of depends on what kind of Catholics, but again, my experience is that they're accepting of you for what you are.
There's different levels to it. Some are going to be more devout than others. But just going back to that conversion rate, I think personally for me, in terms of religions and religious upbringing, it's the old adage of having an education. So when I went to university and then being educated in philosophy and social sciences, that really just tipped it over for me. And a lot of people say this a lot, whether they're introduced to some kind of logic, philosophy, mathematics or science, so that really does question God a lot further.
What happens to everybody? They become more educated, especially in my case. I got interested in science when I was pretty young, teenager. I remember reading about evolution, for example, and seeing how much sense it made. It just made total sense to me. And I would mention it to other people, and they would say, oh, you can't believe that. And then I would point out that, hey, this book was written by a Catholic priest.
That's exactly the problem with it. I mean, you see it through the education, it does a lot of it. And there's also as well where the best even that a theist can rely on is the God of the Gaps argument. But then where it gets pummeled into a corner more and more, it's the same thing I said to you when we started the discussion about eternity. If we can use eternity in the space of the universe, then I'm a big believer in Occam's razor, so I don't need an additional explanation. If eternity can be explained by the universe, I don't need God on top of that to explain eternity. And these days, God's been pummeled into such a corner, it's like, he can't explain nothing. The Higgs boson from last year, consciousness looks like it's on its way out now in terms of full materialistic explanation. There's nothing left for it to explain. But a very fundamental issue I still think that's very salient socially is what we've mentioned here with different kind of strands of religious ideas, some that are more tolerant and some that are more constricting, is this aspect of how different theists need different help and work done with them. And there was a big contentious issue last year with Atheism Plus, which is basically how we should tailor the message to different kind of theists. And I think there's a lot to be said there. So essentially, aspects of atheism that did start off with the elite educated people, but there's still a big reason. So my family's from a Mediterranean background, but there's still a reason why certain people that are Mediterranean from Italy, Spain, Portugal, that haven't got an education, that still believe in God. And you see this across the world with certain African-American communities in the States, where if you're going to turn them into atheists, they need a different message than just pure intellectual arguments, because unfortunately they're less likely to achieve or get the opportunity to go and have an education. So that's a very serious issue going forward, how if we're going to tailor this atheist message, it can't be a one size fits all message.
Well, you know, trouble is, that's the only message there is. You can't provide them with the promise of everlasting life, and that's what they want. That's the most important thing to them, is everlasting life. That's why Islam and Christianity are both so successful. In fact, the suffering problem that Christians have great difficulty with, because you can't really solve the suffering problem within existing Christian ideas, whereas the Muslims have no trouble with it. You suffer, and that's the way it is. It's but such a small instant of in eternity that you live that it doesn't matter. You see? That's just a tiny instant. You have all eternity to think about, and so whatever you have to put up with in this life, don't worry about it. Just get on with your life, and you'll die, and then you'll be in heaven and paradise the rest of your life, the rest of eternity. So that makes a lot more sense than the Christians' interpretations. I think Bart Ehrman's book on suffering is really terrific, and where he tries to come up to explain how the Judeo-Christian teachings just have failed to solve the problem of suffering.
The problem with suffering is always a very big issue, universally across all religions. But I think as well, sometimes when you approach different fears with different angles, so people that haven't got an education but they still believe in some kind of organised religion, there are different tactics you can use for them. So I'm not going to throw at them the history of philosophy from David Hume and the ancient Greeks to not believe in the gods, because that's something they can't appreciate. But people have an instant appeal to logic, that even if they might want to cognitively dissolve afterwards in terms of self-rationality, which obviously religious people have to do, they have to rationalise stuff to themselves all the time, but there's little tacks that you could use with them. So, for example, on the Muslim front, where they do deal with suffering much better than the Christian tradition, but at the same time, if that is a plan from your maker that's going to give you more pleasure in the future, then that's still not a perfect plan, because he should still be relieving any kind of suffering in the first place. It's not a very efficient plan. I find that kind of argument works well. And with Christians in my family that I've known as well, for example, the appeal of eternal life, which is also one of the biggest crutches that religious people can't let hold of. So if you're going to live forever and be an eternal you, then you'd also have to tell me what you were doing before you were born. And these are the kind of issues that make people think on their feet. And I sometimes think, okay, I'm not going to throw a Dawkins, a Stenger, or a Christopher Hitchens book at you, and I'm not going to throw you some David Hume. But if I use this in logic, there's certain arguments to be said for that. But each to their own. I mean, there's a brilliant point as well about them. Richard Carrier, who does a lot of history of Christianity, his point is also very salient in this. If you're going to deal with, say, the Latino and the African-American culture of religious belief in America, and we know that education is so important to forming atheists, and seeing that Latinos and African-Americans are far less likely to have an advanced education, and surely that's an issue you've got to address. And that's a very sympathetic view I have, especially with dealing with the mass theists in the world, because not everyone has the chance to read all these great books throughout science and philosophy. So it's a social problem.
Yeah, we have to be patient. I mean, I live in a state that's become increasingly Hispanic. I mean, Latino. Mm. Lots of people from Mexico and South and the other Central American countries here. And I know there's a bilingual school nearby. My grandchildren go to a school that has quite a few of these kids, and it is true that their parents just do not have the interest in the child's education. They it drives us crazy to see how these kids are just not encouraged to learn and to study, and how aren't taken care of, aren't nurtured, because the learning is just something these people, these people haven't had as part of their tradition. But it's going to change. Another generation, two generations, and it's going to be different. And the same thing with the black community. I think, you know, they little by little, you're going to see these people becoming more and more educated, and when they become more and more educated, they're going to become less and less religious. That's inevitable.
I mean, we've got hope for the future. There's a lot of work both in the UK, in America, about the taboo of atheism in these cultures. But as you say, it's just about being patient. And at the end of the day, after generations, it's surely going to be, slightly decreased for sure, because once education comes in, there's not a lot it can do. Okay, Victor, well, it's been absolutely fascinating speaking to you, both in terms of why does anything exist at all, and also just general talk about atheistic challenges.
Okay, Tony, great talking to you.
You too, take care.